wanted to give the guy the biggest hug in the world. Like, dude, you just saved my life.
The Mount Rapinski rescue, this time from the mouth of the guy who spent all night on the side of the cliff. And he might be the oldest registered racer in Alcan 200 history, but don't tell 70-year-old Duck Hess that. It's the KHNS Local News. I'm Tara Bicknell. Those stories coming up next. The Alcan 200 snow machine race turns a nearby stretch of the Alcan into one of the greatest racetracks on the continent this weekend for the 42nd year in a row. With less snowfall lately, race coordinator Angie Robinson assures the course will still take place on a road and not on the alternate route that's been used a few times in the past.
You know, there are some bare spots. They will have to race on bare pavement. Hopefully, it's not long stretches of pavement is what we're hoping for. But, you know, with it blowing as much as it is up top, we're kind of hoping that maybe it'll blow some loose snow back down onto the course.
Classifications remain the same for possibly the last year, since the race is getting more and more four-stroke machines with turbos. But there are no rule or registration changes. The halfway point is back to its original location at Desdiash Lake area after a change for last year only. But it's not just about the race. The festivities begin Friday night with the Calcutta auction at 5:30 p.m. at the Fogcutter Bar. It's open to the public and is a lively event to raise money for racers and winnings for the right bidders. The race itself begins Saturday morning at 10 a.m. and starts to finish around 1:30 or 2 p.m. with a Haines Highway road closure throughout the day. Stay tuned to KHNS for road closure details leading up to the race.
The highway is closed. You either can spectate from the start-finish line or the Desdiash point.
The Saturday night banquet and award ceremony begins at a later time this year, giving racers and spectators more time to get back from the day's event. That banquet is at 7 p.m. on Saturday night at the Elks Lodge. Registrations open at the Calcutta auction, but the locals who are expected to race this year include recent competitors Chris Brooks and Zach and Tyler Farron, first-year racer Jack Smith Jr., and one racer whose name hasn't been on the roster for quite a few years.
We've got an old-school member who's coming out. He just had his 70th birthday in October, and that would be my dad, Duck Hess. He decided that just because he turned 70 doesn't mean he can't race. But as far as I know, I believe he may be one of the oldest racers in the history of the race itself.
KHNS News will offer race coverage on Monday evening on the regular local news broadcast at 5:30 p.m. and Tuesday morning at 6:49 and 7:49 a.m. Then it can be found online at khns.org under the Listen tab. Somewhere high on the side of Mount Rapinski's steepest cliff, there's said to be a strewn pair of snowshoes, a couple scattered gloves, and a backpack with cookies in it. But after one of the most intrepid rescues the area has ever seen, it's what's not up there that's important. 40-year-old Keith Hutchins is back home in Haines, recovering from one cracked vertebrae, another one with a compression fracture, a shattered tailbone, and a mess of bruises and sores that's to blame from falling hundreds of feet and standing at attention on a rock face ledge all night. He's able to move his limbs, but he's in a back brace, passing the time until his next x-ray in the cozy folds of a new recliner that his dad bought for him upon his return from the hospital in Juneau.
Yeah, life's a chair. Life is supposed to be a beach right now because I was supposed to leave to San Diego next day.
The rescue, which entailed plucking a man with potential back injuries and hypothermia off the side of a nearly vertical rocky face thousands of feet from the ground, involved a handful of area rescue teams and took 20 hours. A Coast Guard rescuer called it the third hardest land rescue of his long career. Hutchins called it impressive.
I've always looked at things pretty much happy-go-lucky kind of guy. It's really understood life's short and that's why I hike up the mountain alone. I've always just been that kind of person.
It started on a day hike late last week that was more or less routine to Hutchins. He's lived in the area for almost 10 years and hikes and snowboards on the town's backyard mountain just about every weekend.
And it was just going to be a real short trip because I wanted to get back home and pack and clean my house up before I left the next day. So I left 9:30 up Piedad. Visibility was pretty good. It was, you know, around a 800-foot ceiling or something like that, around 2,000-foot coming out of trees.
But that all started to change, as visibility began to deteriorate with every higher step. Hutchins pushed on, though, determined to reach the top before turning around.
Doing a lot of debating in my head to turn around, but it's like, you're so close, you know, to not go to the top would have just devastated me, you know, to know all day the next day that I was so close and chickened out. As soon as I got to the top, I was like, oh, it really shut in on me. I can't see hardly my hand in front of my face.
Hutchins turned back without more delay, but after only a few steps, stopped recognizing the landscape he usually knows. He attempted to slide down a steep part of the trail, and it was only when he started gaining too much speed that he realized it wasn't the trail.
And that's when I looked around and I was like, oh no, this is like totally the wrong spot. And I realized at that point I didn't know where I was. Came to the next hill, which I thought was the second one, sat down and slid down that. And when I slid down that, I started going like really fast and got caught in like a little avalanche. And then when I landed at the bottom, I was like lost in my gloves and I was totally buried in snow. And so I had one hand that was sticking out a little bit, and I kind of like dug my way out. And that's when I realized that there was like every which way I looked was like pretty gnarly cliffs.
From there, he phoned his dad at his home in Haines from his cell phone. Dad's advice was to call the police department, but Keith thought he saw a route down and hung up the phone. It was that move that got him into even more trouble.
Because all of a sudden I lost cell phone service. From there, I looked around and there was like no way up. There was no way down. And I was going to kind of overhang and just drop down to this little ledge so that I could make a phone call. And when I kind of scooched out there and went to drop down, I fell over backwards, head over heels, and just started tumbling down the side of the mountain. As I was tumbling, I felt my back snap. And so I was like, oh no, you know, I got a call.
Alaska State Trooper Josh Bentz worked with rescuers to immediately initiate a complex search and rescue effort. In the meantime, Hutchins even thought about inching his way down if rescuers couldn't reach him.
I was trying to hold on for dear life was the main thing. I kept telling him, you know, I'm going to lose it here. And so I was telling him, you know, I'm going to slip off this cliff. I can't hold on very long. My back's killing me. I'm getting cold. I'm soaking wet. I don't have no gloves. I mean, I'm in a really bad situation, Josh. He's like, don't hold on there, buddy. The helicopter's coming, you know.
But it would be about 20 hours before the helicopter could reach Hutchins, and about 20 hours longer that he'd have to wait, gloveless and soaking wet, standing upright on a doormat patch of snow he made into a small ledge out of surrounding drift, leaning back against the mountain, at times able to stare straight down to the Haines Airport below.
Because below me was just like a huge, if I would have fell, it was like death for sure below me. No matter what I did, there was just no comfort level. At certain points, I kind of tried to like meditate and do out-of-body experiences and stuff like that, and I found little moments where I could, you know, escape the whole situation, but they're pretty brief and far between.
Hutchins said above all, there were two commanding thoughts consuming his mind, keeping him focused on surviving through the night: his daughter and water.
As I was going down to San Diego to see my daughter, and there's just no way that I was going to let it end like that. Tell myself, if I live, it'd be so nice to have a glass of water again. And I even told myself, it's really going to suck if I have to die this thirsty and never get to taste water again.
Hutchins painfully watched as the helicopter missed him time and time again until he realized they were looking for a needle in a haystack.
That first, when I see it, you know, I think, okay, that's it. It's over. I'm going to get saved. This is all over. I'm going to live, you know. And then when it leaves, it's like right back down to, here I go. I might die on this mountain.
His final communication before his cell phone died was confirmation that the search team received coordinates. He sent them from Google Earth on his phone.
Every once in a while, I'd hear him blow a horn, but the way it sounded, I thought the horn was coming from the road. So I thought it was just the cops or something would drive by every once in a while and blow a horn to let me know they didn't forget about me. And I knew that I was going to be up there for the whole night, you know, so I really started hunkering down. At that point, it was like going on 10 o'clock, and I got stuck at 2. And then there was like even a little pocket where I could see all the stars above me. The Big Dipper was right above me, and it was really pretty out.
The next morning, the helicopter located Hutchins, and after carefully planning their approach, lowered a rescuer to him.
When I saw the helicopter, I like almost started crying. You know, I was like almost like in tears, but I couldn't even cry. It was just one of them. I don't even know how to explain it. But the whole time the helicopter was trying to pick me up above all the snow that was on the rocks was all kinds of little avalanches from the prop wash or the propellers. So I kind of just let it all cover me all up and kind of just made a little cocoon. And then when the guy came down to me, I dug myself out and he harnessed me up and just lifted us up out of there. I just wanted to give the guy the biggest hug in the world. Like, dude, you just saved my life.
Hutchins says he'll keep hiking alone, but says he regrets becoming complacent and not being more prepared for emergencies that could happen on day hikes.
I just took it for granted that I'd never get stuck out on one of those cliffs, that I knew that mountain too good and it would never happen to me. And then next thing you know, the guy probably goes up there more than most people in this town, I end up stuck out on a cliff, and the worst possible cliff at that.
Hutchins isn't exactly out of the woods yet. He says the next x-ray will determine if broken pieces of bone are healing in the right places or moving in a direction that could put his spinal cord in danger. That could require surgery. But then again, he survived a lot worse.
You just realize the situation you're in, and then the will to live takes over, and you just do it. Here I am, and this is really happening, and you are really stuck here, and your back really is broken, and... Now, what are you going to do now, Keith? Are you just going to lay down and give up, or are you going to hold tough?
To hear the background on this story, go to khns.org and click on the Listen tab. Copies of newscasts that aired during the rescue are posted online. I'm Tara Bicknell, reporting for KHNS.